Hello and welcome to the Mailbox Rogues Gallery, where every episode we take a figure from history and pop them into our metaphorical mailbox of rogues. My name's Sean.
And my name's Birch.
How are you doing this week, Birch? It's nice to be free, isn't it?
Oh, it's just living the life of Riley. Well, not exactly the life of Riley at the moment. We're in a library.
No, and also we are on the run from the law, so... I mean, we're basically sort of like living hand to mouth, keeping an eye over our shoulders at all time, and basically living a sort of state of paranoia and fear and anxiety and all sorts of other worrisome feelings.
Yeah, but you know, it keeps you on your toes, which is important.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Good toe workout. We've got jobs in a library, haven't we? So that's like our cover this week, just to keep our heads down. Nobody will be aware of us.
Absolutely. But I mean... I appreciate your mate Badminton Jones sorting these jobs out for us and helping us out. But I mean, did he have to pick a library? I mean, I hate books.
You hate books?
Yeah.
What do you hate about them?
Oh, the pages, the words. I mean, that's what a book is. So yeah, I hate books.
Now, does this stem from that time I came upon you reading quietly, studiously, I would say, and... I slammed the book in your face very sharply and sort of like caught your nose in it.
I mean, that might have something to do with it. I mean, like for the rest of that term at school, as you might recall, after you did that, I had a comically long, thin nose, which I was waiting to have an operation to fix. And I mean, you know what the doctor's waiting lists are like. So I had this kind of like long tapeworm of a nose for, I'd say, a good 3 months. And I was the laughing stock of school.
Yeah, you were. It was great. Everybody loved it. I maybe the most popular kid in school, as I recall. I thought it was brilliant.
I mean, ridicule and popularity are two... Anyway, let's just forget about that. Let's just keep our heads down, do library work, whatever that entails, and just see how it goes.
Yeah. So I'm assistant librarian. I think you're my assistant, aren't you?
What? I'm assistant to an assistant librarian. He couldn't have given me like a manager role.
Well, look, you've already met the manager. You know the manager, Mr. McGillicuddy.
Yeah, we've both seen him. I mean, him as a manager. I mean, he can't even manage to put his socks on in the morning. I don't know how he's managing this whole fucking building.
No, but he's a nice, sweet old man. You know, he didn't have to give us this job.
Something about him I just don't trust.
I don't know what to say. He's been very nice to us so far. But we're here in the library this week. We're going to record an episode of our podcast. And of course, we are talking about Ernest Hemingway.
That's right, Ernest Miller Hemingway, the author, bullfighter, war hero, just all-round adventurous chap.
Yeah, quite an adventurous chap.
So yeah, Ernest Hemingway, he was born on the 21st of July, 1899, grew up in Oak Park in Illinois, father was a physician, mother was a musician, two shuns in the family.
And it rhymes as well, so that's fun.
Yeah, they must have had... wonderful, copious amounts of enjoyment at dinner parties. Oh, I'm a physician, you're a musician.
Let's call the whole thing off.
Oh, and I'm sure that those laughs lasted all night long.
Oh, so a happy childhood then, basically.
Not really.
Well, why ever not, with all that fun in the family?
He was sort of brought up sort of as like a twin to like his slightly older sister. His mum used to dress them up to look the same. So Ernest, as a tot, was being put in women's clothing. He had his hair very long, which is very antithetical to what we know him for, a very macho man.
Well, look, going back to one of our earlier episodes this series, Freud again, you know, I think that's really informed a lot of what we're going to talk about for the rest of this series. But there's a very Freudian approach to this in which you could say that Hemingway's uber masculinity and... emphasis on very masculine pastimes and traits, it must go back to that, mustn't it? He must have loved being in those dresses. He must have loved the long hair and the bows and the frills, and then grown up and realized, oh, that's not very blokey, I better shun that side of myself.
And then you got his dad, who was a very macho man, much like macho man Randy Savage.
I knew you were gonna say that, because if you weren't, I was about to.
He was the macho man Randy Savage of his day, was Ernest's dad. But yeah, like he'd take him like hunting and stuff. He'd be like, son, you take that bloody dress off right this instant. We're going to go kill a bear.
That is some strong parenting.
Yep. And he'd be like, yes, father, I'll take off tut dress.
Right. You've never been to Illinois then, have you?
Yeah, it's just south of Lancashire, isn't it?
Okay. You have been there then.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's like a second home.
Fair enough.
Illinois hot pot. Oh.
Delicious. Yeah.
Can't beat it.
A weird little childhood for a weird little twin.
Yeah.
And he was a happy man.
Was he?
I mean, not at the end, obviously. Maybe we'll get to that later.
Maybe we will.
Maybe we will, yeah.
But, you know, his younger years were also very informative in a positive way as well. You know, he...
Excuse me. Would you mind keeping it down?
Who the hell is that? Hey,
we
shut
work
up.
Here.
Yeah, we're busy. We're recording a podcast in a library.
He's got a note. He's telling us to shut up. He's shouting across the fucking library like a lunatic.
Look, I'm just asking for you to keep it down.
Jesus, what crawled up his ass? My God. Why don't you keep it down, huh?
Yeah, look, mate.
Look at you over there, nerd with a bloody book.
Yeah, and we'll kick you out of here. Handily.
Yeah, we have that authority.
Look, lanyards.
Lanyards.
Yeah, look, there you go. He's putting his head back down.
Yeah, yeah, we taught him a
lesson. Back to your book. Back to your book.
Nerd.
All right. Oh, look, it's Mr. McGillicuddy.
Oh, for fuck. Hi, Mr. McGillicuddy. Hello there, boys. How are you getting on?
All right, but we just had this dope over here trying to shush us in our own library.
Yeah, can you believe that? Is he a nuisance? Do you want us to chuck him out? I don't mind. I'm more than happy to chuck him to the curb outside.
We'll get rid of him.
you two bring such a laugh to this old building, I tell you. No, he's a regular here. He's just leaving bees. He's just reading a book.
All right, if you say so.
So, how are you boys getting on then? Are you settling in nicely?
Yeah, actually, we've been quite busy. We've just sort of had a bit of a rearrange of some of the books. This whole Dewey Decimal system wasn't really working out for us, so we've taken all the books out. As you can see, we've got most of them in a pile on the floor here.
Yeah.
We're ranking the authors by how hot they are.
Oh, right. What, you're going to tell us that's a problem, are you? Come on, we're proactive thinkers. Oh yes, I can't deny you that. But traditionally, libraries, they usually go by alphabetical order. It's easier for people to find books that way. Yeah, but I mean, you think of it, if somebody's looking for a book, maybe by an author with a surname G, they look where G would normally be, they find a new book that they'd never heard of, take it home, ends up being their favourite book ever.
There you go.
No, I can certainly understand the benefit of doing something like that, but if it's all the same, I'd appreciate it if you lads could put those books... back where they were. I can give you a hand as well. That took us fucking ages, mate. Jesus.
Hours. Look, we hadn't even finished figuring out who's hotter between Margaret Atwood and Jermaine Greer. I mean, what do you think?
Well, I mean, like, my opinion is that although Margaret has the better smile, Jermaine clearly has the better tits. I mean, but what do you think? Maybe you could help us out here. Oh, I wouldn't know anything about that. I've been happily married for many years. You telling me you don't spot other women every once in a while, Mr. McGillicuddy?
Don't have a little peek into the dust jacket, take a look at the author's photo at the back?
I bet you've done that a few times, you dirty old bastard. You boys are two characters, you really are. But anyway, I'd appreciate it if you could put the books back to where they were. Well, I mean, if you're going to be an arse about it, maybe, I guess we'll have to, won't we?
I'm not happy about it.
No, nor am I, nor am I. I told you. Didn't I earlier what he's like? Oh, what do you mean by that? I was talking about you, not to you. Why don't you just do whatever it is you do around here, yeah? Okay, well, I'm going to go and sort out some of the invoices and things like that. So why don't you boys just sort out some of the books and I'll get you both a nice cup of tea in a moment's time. I prefer coffee. Coffee it is then. See you later. Oh, memory like a sieve me. Before I go, I just wanted to say, the fire extinguishers. Now, did you lads remember to fill those ones up?
We did it already. Oh. Leave us alone.
Oh, always, forever and ever with the fucking fire extinguishers. We done them, all right?
Yeah, done. Sorted.
Oh, well, so long as they're done, that's everything. I just wanted to say before I left, you lads are doing a grand job. You really are. Take care. Prick.
Yeah, thank God he's gone.
Jeez, I told you. You were defending him earlier. I told you. There's something about him which is just... It's just sinister.
No, you were right. You know, I don't know. Sometimes I've got rose-tinted glasses when it comes to these things. But you're right. No, he's a tyrant. listen, mate, look, just while he's walking away, right, I'm just going to see if I can chuck this book and get him right in the middle of his back, all right?
Oh, yes, go for it.
Oh, shit, I hit a bookcase.
Oh, God, I think the thing's toppling over.
Uh-oh.
Oh! Oh!
Shit.
Oh, my... The bookcase fell on Mr. McGillicuddy.
I suppose we should go help him.
I guess. I mean, did we want to put these books into the Dewey Decimal System or whatever it's called first, or should we...
Actually, this is a good excuse not to do that.
That's true. Let's go help him.
Right, well, Mr. McGillicuddy is alive. We've propped him up in his chair at the front desk. He's still unconscious.
Try giving him the kiss of life, slapping it out of him, hanging him upside down and wobbling him about, and nothing seems to be working.
He's not waking up, so look, this is a good excuse to get on with our Hemingway podcast.
Yes.
And also, we don't have to do... I mean, we don't have to do any work if he's not here to come down on us like he usually does.
That's true. And he can't have a go at us for smoking these Cuban cigars like he normally would.
No, of course. Although we're not going to get that coffee, so... Oh, well, yeah.
Well, I don't know how to work a kettle, do you?
No. Never used one. No. It's full of steam, isn't it? But how do you get the steam in it? There must be like a pipe that comes in through the bottom where the steam goes in.
I guess so, but if it's filled with steam, how can you fit coffee in there? It's above my pay grade.
Yeah. But Cuban cigars, of course,
yes.
Because Ernest Hemingway, as well as being a very man's man who would be smoking cigars, he did, of course, live in Cuba as well for some time, much to the chagrin of the FBI, who at one point had a file on him. He was quite paranoid about being followed by the FBI. And it turns out he was right, because they were a bit worried about him being a socialist and being a bit too chummy with the Cubans.
If that's not an indicator that we should all be paranoid that the government is constantly watching us, then I don't know what is.
No.
So after leaving high school and after his short tenure at the Kansas City Star as something of a cub reporter, he tried to join the US Army in December of 1917 to join WW1. But they rejected him. They rejected him because of poor eyesight.
Now, was it that, or was it because he went in a dress? Was his mum still dressing him at this point? That's the question.
His dad was meant to be dropping him off at the US Army headquarters, but it ended up being that his mum took him instead. So instead of going in dressed as a lumberjack carrying like a fox's head, instead of that, he ended up going in there in one of his sister's dresses, wearing a wig.
Mm. And they didn't take him? They didn't want him in the army?
They didn't, no. They thought he wasn't suited for it.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, he literally wasn't suited for it because he was wearing a dress.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. And this is how he probably ended up in the Italian ambulance service, didn't he? Or was it the Red Cross? He was driving ambulances for the Italians in the First World War.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, joined the Red Cross as an ambulance driver in Italy. But I find it funny that he was rejected by the US Army for poor eyesight. Surely you'd need better eyesight being an ambulance driver.
I don't know. I mean, they're quite big. You wouldn't lose one, would you?
No, but he's going to be sat in the ambulance. He's not, like, searching for ambulances.
Oh, I was just thinking about, like, the first day when they're like, there's your ambulance over there, mate. And then he has to, you know, walk over and find the ambulance. So I suppose you're right. The job is more than that.
Yeah, well, I mean, when he did the test for his eyesight, they gave him, like, a load of sentences to read on a board, and he was like, right, you have to read these. And he had like these really long sentences on there, these really long descriptive sentences, and he just couldn't read them. He just stuck to like reading short sentences without very much description at all. And they were like, no, look, we want you to read these longer, more flowery, almost Victorian style sentences just to test your eyesight. But he wasn't having any of it, so they said, well, if you can't read it, you know, you're going to have to fuck off.
Well, and that's interesting because I think what you're pointing to there is that is his style of writing. It's very stoic, very terse. It's without a lot of emotions, a lot of adjectives. And it's basically just very simple, short, sharp sentences. And all of the emotion is inferred.
I don't know anything about that. I'm just telling you what happened in the eye infirmary.
Okay, fair enough, yeah.
But no, so yeah, he was there as a ambulance driver during the second... No, not the Second World War. The second one hadn't even started at this point.
He didn't even know that there was going to be a Second World War at that point.
It makes you wonder, though, why they were calling it World War One. I mean, they must have anticipated it.
Yeah, it's a bit suspicious, really, isn't it?
But so, yeah, I mean, like, although he wasn't in the army, his life was certainly in peril. Like, on his first day, he went to search through a munitions factory explosion. You know, this wasn't a walk in the park. It was a walk in a munitions factory, and it had just exploded.
A munitions factory, you say?
Munitions factory, yeah. First, the munitions. Well, it turns out he had bad hearing as well as poor eyesight.
So he went to the wrong factory.
He went to the wrong factory. They said to him, look, you need to go to the munitions factory, right, and save some of the Italian soldiers there, because there's been an explosion. And he thought that he was saying, you need to go to the munitions factory, because there's like an explosion of sound. And he's like, oh, that sounds good to me. So he drove the ambulance going at about 80 miles an hour down these streets. War going on in the background, gunfire, explosions. Of course, poor hearing. He couldn't really hear any of that. So he drove down to the nearest jazz cafe that he could find. Sat there, had a whale of a time.
Oh, yeah. Those were the days as well. Sat on a little Italian piazza listening to jazz with an espresso in hand. Beautiful.
Famously, I mean, the jazz scene in Italy in 1918, I mean, it was just unparalleled.
Unparalleled, yeah. No, the likes of which has not been seen since.
No.
I'm just going to put my cigar out on this no smoking sign. You passed us another one?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, let me just light one up.
Oh, shit, I dropped it. Oh,
ooh.
It's just rolled up to that bookcase.
Oh, I'm sure it'll be fine. It's only ash.
Yeah, forget about that. Yeah, so driving around Italy, I know this is a bit off topic. We were talking about his time in the war, but did you know about his love of polydactyl cats?
His love of what?
Polydactyl cats, right? It's not a term I'd heard before until I was researching Ernest Hemingway, but a polydactyl cat is a cat that's got six or more toes on each foot. Basically, a mutant cat.
Right, okay. He loved mutant cats then.
He loved mutant cats. He literally, when he was living in Key West in Florida, he had around 50 of them.
50?
50 mutant cats. It's not really speaking to his masculine side again, is it? I mean, this is what we're talking about, isn't it? This sort of push and pull within him of the masculine and the feminine.
Yeah.
He's basically turned into a mad old cat lady.
Yeah. I mean, these two sides were always fighting against one another, his more masculine, more feminine side. I mean, that must have just been so difficult as well. Like, 50 cats. I mean, it'd be difficult to keep your eye on 50 cats. And I suppose if he was housing all of them, he'd be like checking their paws before they came in at night. It's just like, yep, six beans. Yep, that's right. Yeah, six beans. What's this? Three? Nice try, mate. Fuck off.
You're out.
Yeah, come on. We've all had a laugh here, Mittens, but you got to fuck off, mate. You've not got nearly enough toes.
Yeah. Can you smell smoke? What? It's looking a bit smoky in here. Like, it's starting to get a little bit. Oh shit! The Hemingway bookcase is on fire.
Oh,
the bookcase that's got all the Hemingway work in it. That cigar that I left there.
Oh my god! I told you ash is bad. Oh my god. Think. Oh, fire extinguishers.
Right. Birch.
What?
Remember how we told Mr. McGillicuddy earlier that we had refilled fire extinguishers?
Yeah, we did.
Well, yeah, but remember how we actually didn't fill the fire extinguishers?
Oh, yeah, that was a lie, wasn't it?
That was a lie, yeah.
Oh, fuck. How else do you put out a fire? More books? Would that kind of dampen it?
Let's push all the Hemingway books into the middle of the flames, and then hopefully that will sort of dampen it.
Good idea.
Yeah, like these nice, dry, old volumes. So there's a first edition here. Yeah, that'll dampen it. That'll stop the flames. So listeners, we lost all of Hemingway's books. There was a tragic, unexpected, unavoidable fire in the library. And unfortunately, it started nearabouts where we are. You know, we're talking about Hemingway. So we were kind of standing near the section with all the Hemingway work in it. Probably just a coincidence that the fire started here, but unfortunately, it did eat up all of the Hemingway books before just petering out. I mean, one of the patrons of the library did actually throw a coat over it. I mean, that might have helped, but
yeah, I don't know. I think we did all we could from our end.
Yeah. I mean, we certainly watched it and threw some more books into it. Yeah. And I mean, I did try chucking a coat on it, but I couldn't find a coat. So I just sort of grabbed Mr. McGillicuddy's sweater vest that he was wearing and chucked that into the fire. Didn't really help, to be honest.
Yeah, well, I saw you were doing that. So I thought, yeah, well, I'll follow suit. So I took his belt off, pulled his trousers down and tried dampening the flames with that. But, you know, the corduroy goes up in flames quick.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's out now. We're quite fortunate because, you know, while it has destroyed the Hemingway work, the bookcases on either side were miraculously saved. So I think to the left of the Hemingway work, we'd got Kim Kardashian's unauthorized biography. That survived.
Thank God.
We've got loads of copies of that. And of course, the third 50 Shades book, loads of those copies left. And on the right-hand side, we had The Da Vinci Code and Mein Kampf. So those have all survived.
Yeah, truly the will of God that those books all survived.
Yeah, it does make me wonder, though, why this library's got so many copies of Mein Kampf.
Yeah, I mean that's just another thing that's kind of niggling at me with this Mr. McGillicuddy. I mean, who's calling out to rent that book out on a Sunday afternoon?
Yeah, it's just a whole bookcase. It's just, you know, like not floor to ceiling, but it's like a 6-foot bookcase. And it's literally just the Da Vinci Code and Mein Kampf.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one would be too many.
Of each, yeah.
That's too many.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we'll ask him when he wakes up, perhaps.
He is still unconscious, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, hang on a sec. I left him face down when I took his trousers off. I'll put him on so he's on his back.
Yeah.
Right, there we go.
He was groaning a bit when I took his shoes off and threw them in the fire. Well, anyway, look, as long as he's still unconscious, we can get this mess sorted out before he wakes up, right?
Yeah, you see, the thing is, though, like, I mean, how are we going to do that? Because we can't really go out and buy more books. Like, one, because we're wanted fugitives and we don't want to be seen. And no. Secondly, because I don't want to buy books. I mean, I've barely got enough money to get by as it is.
No, yeah. Well, I mean, I do have, like, £500 worth of book tokens. It's the only money that I actually have with me. But, you know, I was hoping that J.K. Rowling would write another Harry Potter book at some point, so I was saving them for that.
Yeah, you keep a hold of your book tokens, Sean. You never know. She might bless us all with another Harry Potter adventure.
Look, here's a bit of a crazy idea, right? Just stop me if this is a bit too mad, right?
No, please go on.
Well, look, we've been talking about Hemingway. We're obviously both very familiar with his work. Both very well-read gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
We can knock these out ourselves, right? We could just write them out, draw up a few book covers, staple them together on this A4 printer paper. Nobody's going to notice the difference, are they? We've got such a good grasp of his work.
No, that's right. Yeah, we could do that. And I mean, we've both always wanted to write the great American novel. I mean, this is our opportunity to write about 5 or 6 great American novels.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Easy. Well, look, let's just try and remember what the titles of the books were and what they're about, right? So we've got The Old Man and the C Word. Now, what was that about? That was about this old man, a bit of a sweary old man, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, that was his last published work. And like by this point, he was a bit of a sweary old man himself. So it's almost like an autobiography.
Yeah.
The Old Man and the C Word.
All right. Well, that one's going to write itself, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that was literally him. Based on his time of when he was living in Cuba, where he spent a lot of time fishing. And so what he used to do is that whenever fishermen would come in after like a day's fishing, they'd dock the boat and he'd be stood there and he'd just say to them, he's like, "All right, cunt," like that. And then he'd jump on board and throw the fish back in the sea.
Right. So he's something of an anti-fisherman. A fish rights activist.
Famously an animal rights activist, yeah. Hemingway, absolutely.
Well, at that stage, yeah. You know, he's gone a bit soft in his old age.
And, you know, classic Hemingway with the subtext, you know, he would call people the C word, and when he'd get the fish, he'd chuck them in the sea, so the fish were literally going seaward.
Oh, subtext, there we go. You've got this book down. Right, you write that one, I'll do the next one.
Gladly.
You know this other one, A Farewell to Arms? I've read that one.
Oh, do tell.
Well, it's quite autobiographical, actually. It's about an American driving an ambulance for the Italian army.
Yeah.
So he falls in love with a nurse and they escape to Switzerland. But then he loses his arms in a pull-up contest with a Swiss chocolatier.
this sounds like the best book ever written.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good. It's good. I mean, you know those chocolatiers, they've got those like icing bags full of ganache. You see them on the Lindt adverts.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, these master chocolatiers. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you need their strong arms to be squeezing those ganache bags.
Famously burly men, the chocolatier.
You can imagine they could probably do quite a lot of pull-ups.
Absolutely. And Hemingway himself, you know, being a bit of a macho man himself, he thought, I'll knock these fucking chocolatiers down a peg or two. I'll show them.
But he has to say farewell to his arms.
Obviously, like every book at the end has a moral to the story. Like every book has that. So what does Hemingway's character learn when he loses his arms?
Don't fuck with the Swiss.
Right, okay. I mean, that's a pretty useful lesson to learn, because the Swiss, believe it or not, the Swiss are still about. They're still knocking around, the Swiss, and like even the chocolatier Swiss.
Yeah, and famously very aggressive people. So watch out for them. Watch out.
Any Swiss listeners, Swisseners, as I like to call them.
Yeah.
Just lay off, all right? Just
yeah.
Calm down a bit.
Calm down. Give the world a break.
Yeah.
And then the only other one I know about, this one was actually a bit of a departure for him, For Whom the Egg Rolls. And that was, you know, obviously a children's book about a naughty egg that doesn't want to be someone's breakfast and it keeps rolling away.
Yeah, yes. I'd say his best work, personally.
Yeah, it's definitely a bit more accessible than some of the other works.
I find he gets a bit heady a lot of the time, but with this, he gets a bit eggy, and I love it.
Well, it is a children's book, so yeah, it's definitely a departure for him.
I believe he also wrote a couple of Beano annuals, so I think we just have to scribble those up and we'll be good as gold.
Yeah, well, I got the Beano annuals in my backpack, so we'll just leave them here.
Oh, ideal. Fantastic.
I mean, I have, you know, some of them I've got from home, some of them I was stealing from the library, so I just give back a few of those.
Yeah, give and take.
Yeah, yeah.
After the First World War, he did go to Paris, which was an assignment from the Toronto Star, which was a paper that he was working for. And he went there with his wife, his first wife, first of many. When he went there, he met a lot of people, many of them linked to the modernist movement. Met a lot of people like Gertrude Stein, James Joyce, Ezra Pound, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Pablo Picasso.
Well, don't forget as well, Owen Wilson in the film Midnight in Paris by Woody Allen.
That's right. Owen Wilson was there as well, and they all got on famously. And, I mean, it's not really talked about much in usual Hemingway biographies, but they were a bit of a rough crew, this group of artists in Paris at that time. They were a few Jack the Lads.
Yeah, out on the lash in gay Paris.
That's right. Yep, lock up your daughters. Pablo Picasso's in town.
Yeah,
they all had like laddie nicknames for each other. They'd call Pablo Picasso, they'd call him Picasso.
Fuck's sake. Oh yeah, who else got a nickname?
F. Scott Fitzgerald, of course, was called F. Snot Fitzgerald.
Oh.
Because famously, he used to snot everywhere he went. He'd literally just kind of, it didn't matter if he was indoors or outdoors, he'd just kind of like cover one nostril and he'd like that. He was a dirty bastard.
They were a bunch of rowdy lads, weren't they?
They really were. I mean, yeah, James Joyce, you know, of course, Irish, so he loved a drink.
Racist. Who else was there?
Gertrude Stein.
Gertie Goodtime Stein, they used to call her.
Gertie Goodtime. Oh, yeah, she was anyone at the end of a night's drinking with the lads.
Oh, a rowdy bunch indeed.
And these people were meant to be art and culture at this point, at the turn of the 20th century. I mean, is that right?
Well, like you say, they were meant to be. But, I mean, artists? I call them piss artists. You know, maybe it's a good thing we burned some of this work. Maybe we should burn some more.
Yeah, are there any copy of The Great Gatsby around that we can set fire to?
I already burned them.
Oh, you have?
Kindling.
Oh, right. Well, I've got a copy of Dubliners here. I was actually using that book as a bookmark.
Oh, it's quite a big book to use as a bookmark.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've got this even bigger book that I've actually been reading. And like, I've not got a bookmark on me, so oh, what the fuck could I use? I'll just grab any old shit. What's this? Dubliners? Yeah, we'll just put that in. So I've just been using that Dubliners as a bookmark.
Yeah, chuck it in.
Chuck it in the fire.
Oh, wait, we put the fire out already, haven't we?
Oh, we could start another fire.
We've still got more cigars.
Yes, we do. Yeah, hang on, let me get some.
Some might say we're not quick to learn our lessons, but who cares?
Oh, my head. Oh, what's happening?
Mr. McGillicuddy, you've had a fall.
A very, very nasty fall. What? A fall? No, I'd... Oh, my head. The last thing I remember was like a bookcase. Yeah, that's right. A bookcase fell on top of me.
No, that didn't happen, Mr. McGillicuddy. You had a fall. And it looks like your memory isn't so good anymore these days either.
Yeah, do you have your daughter's number, telephone number? We're going to have to phone her and put you in a home, I think. Oh, really? No, I swear there was a... What's that smell? It smells like smoke.
Yes, there was a small incident while you were sleeping, when you were out unconscious.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. That guy who you were talking about earlier, your regular.
Yeah, the one that we were trying to kick out.
Yeah, exactly. He was only puffing away Cuban cigar after Cuban cigar. I mean, who does that? Who does that in a library?
He was smoking marijuana joints and he was going, it's the Dewey Decimal System.
I mean, such disregard for the Dewey Decimal System. I mean, we couldn't take it. So we politely asked him to leave. He became belligerent. And we chucked him out.
Well, but he did before we chucked him out. He threw some of his cigars at a bookcase and it caught fire. And that's where that damage that you see there and all this smoke has come from.
Yeah, but don't worry. Rest assured, we've sorted it out. The Hemingway shelf is still intact, ready to go for people to read his wonderful works.
Oh, well, thank you very much, boys. You're both such... kind, considerate young men. You really are. You know, it's been so difficult with this library, you know, maintaining it. Not many people come in to read books anymore. They're on their Kindles and watching Love Island on the telly and all this kind of stuff. And no one has time for books, but seeing you two coming in here has reinvigorated my passion for this library. I mean, when you came here with... no references, no address, no telephone number, no bank details to pay you to. But I saw you. I saw the look in your eye and I knew there was something about you. And I took a chance and I tell you, lads, I'm so, so glad that I did.
Sorry, what was that?
Go on, off you go. What about that coffee you were going to get us earlier, eh?
Oh, yes, you're quite right. Silly me. I'll, sorry. Not as nimble as I used to be.
Yeah, you keep saying that.
Right, I'll go sort out that coffee, lads. Thanks again. I tell you what, Sean, the urge to chuck another fucking book at him as he's walking past that bookshelf.
I know, I was just thinking the same thing. I think, like, this library... I just don't think it's a good fit for us. We've got this tyrant breathing down our neck.
Oh, yeah.
We have to get out of here.
We should get moving. Where are you thinking?
Well, you won't believe this, but I've just got off the phone with Babington Jones just now, and he's actually got another job lined up for us.
He's very resourceful, that Babington Jones. I've got to hand it to him. So what is it we're going to be doing?
Have you got a green thumb?
I mean, it was a bit septic a couple of weeks ago, but I think it's cleared up now.
No. Right. Are you any good in the garden?
Oh, right. Yeah, I can pick shrubs and cut grass and things of that nature.
How would you like to be groundskeeper for Marlon Brando's mansion and estate?
Sean, I've never wanted anything more in my entire life.
All right. Well, I think that's going to be us next week then, working for Marlon Brando.
And I'll tell you what, while we're there, why don't we talk about Marlon Brando for the podcast?
Well, why not? Why not? I think that's us next week then, is it?
I think so. I think that's us sorted. So, all that's left to say is thank you to the listeners for listening.
Yeah, I hope you've enjoyed it. You can catch us, of course, on various types of social media. So we're on Twitter at Mailbox Rogues. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at Mailbox Rogues Gallery. And you can email us on mailboxroguesgallery@gmail.com.
when it comes to listening to the podcast, you got a number of different choices. You got Apple Podcasts, you got Spotify, Stitcher, YouTube, anywhere where you get your podcasts, you can listen to the Mailbox Rogues Gallery.
And if you are listening on Apple Podcasts, do please give us a rating and a review.
Yep, it all helps to make the podcast more popular, get us on some front pages, you know, more exposure, really. Which is kind of, when I think about it, is kind of counterintuitive. Like, if we're lying low from the authorities, like, the last thing that we'd want is more attention. But at the same time, we want the podcast to do well. It's sort of a bit of a balancing act, really.
Yeah, it is. It is. But I think I would sacrifice more of my life for prison time if I knew the podcast was doing well.
If it could be a guaranteed hit, then sure, yeah, I'd happily give up my freedom.
Yeah, okay. Right, well, McGillicuddy's coming back. Would you want to hand in our notice and work out the week, or should we just fuck off once you've had the coffee?
I'd rather drink the coffee, maybe even throw it at him.
It's a bit harsh, mate.
No, you're right. You know, it is
Wait until it cools down a bit, at least.
Yeah, well, I'll blow on it a couple of times before I throw it.
Yeah, well, maybe we could get him to teach us how to use the kettle before we do that.
Okay, you know, that's a good point. Okay, right. We'll finish our drinks, ask him how to use the kettle, take a couple of the Beano annuals that are here, and then leave forever.
Well, that sounds like a plan. So, thank you for listening, everybody.
Thank you very much. I've been Birch.
And I've been Sean.
Toodles.